From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour is made with a question. What will the future of theater look like after the pandemic? And what about in the next few months? NPR was asking that question last September while telling the story of Oscar Eustace. Eustace is the artistic director of the Public Theater in New York City. He understood COVID well because he had it. Eustace was hospitalized with COVID in March of 2020, and by the time he was released, everything was shut down. He told NPR, quote, "I came out into a world that had no theater, and it's a different world," end quote. Throughout last year, the Public Theater did what it could to stay afloat and fulfill its mission. It streamed audio plays and Zoom productions. It commissioned movies. It created a mobile unit. The content went far and wide, even reaching people in Kazakhstan. Eustace said he wasn't likely to give that help when things returned to quote-unquote normal. But what's normal? And if you look at the Public Theater's website today, you'll see a range of audio plays, outdoor shows, and some traditional productions back on stage. Theaters across the country had to reimagine what performances would look like throughout this pandemic. That included local theaters, which, like the Public Theater, brought performances to audience members' homes or to outdoor spaces. And that continues. And we're starting to see theaters gear up for productions back on indoor stages. What will that look like? Well, today, Broadway's theater owners and operators announced that audience members on Broadway must be vaccinated and wear masks in order to attend performances. The news came just days before the first Broadway play will open in more than 16 months. This hour, we discussed the current state of live theater, what our guests expect for the coming months, and how the industry might change in the long term as a result of the pandemic. And I'd like to welcome our guest now, Bill Ferguson, Acting Executive Director of Garth Fagan Dance. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Welcome to be here, Evan, and happy to be here, Evan. And just so you know, I am no longer Acting Executive Director. I am now actually the Executive Director.
Did I demote you again? I would definitely promote you. I'm sorry.
Well, nobody knew. It's a new thing.
So. Executive Director of Garth Fagan Dance. Nice having you here. Christopher Minnelli. Chris is Executive Director of Jiva Theater Center, unless I promoted or demoted him.
No, I'm still there. Same way. Thanks. Great to be here.
Thanks for being here. Karen Bowerstock is the Executive Artistic Director of the Bristol Valley Theater. Karen, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Ralph Maranto, Artistic Director of JCC Center Stage. Hi, Ralph. Thanks for being here.
Good to be back.
And Rena Golden is on the line with us, the Founder and Artistic Director of the Avenue Black Box Theater in Rochester. Hi, Rena.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me just start with a question on if all of you can sort of set the scene, where you are performing, what it looks like, how it compares to pre-pandemic life. And let me start with Bill Ferguson and Garth Fagan Dance.
Well, Garth Fagan Dance is, we're actually having a performance tomorrow at our studios. We're having a culmination performance for our Summer Movement Institute, which is a 3-week dance institute that we have at our studios at 50 Chestnut Street. We've had students in our studio for the last 3 weeks. They've been masked. We had students 12 to 17. We had to keep it in the range of the students that were vaccinated because we wanted to make sure everybody who was participating was vaccinated. And the new restriction that we're masked indoors, when I saw it come in, we immediately made sure that we continued to stay masked, and we're going to be masked while we're performing. So it's the nature of the beast, I think. We have an upcoming performance with the Eastman School of Music in October, and we have our home season this winter in December. And where we're at right now, I would like to have all my audience members masked.
You would.
Right now, that's where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at right now. I think that's the safest thing for everybody. That way, everybody's considerations are taken care of.
How do your performers feel about being masked when they're performing?
They're not happy about it.
They're not?
They're not happy about it because nobody, I mean, what we do, it's physical.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there doing, you know, really moving. But when you rehearse and prepare for it like that, you know, you're prepared for it, but it's not a fun thing.
It's not. They'll adapt?
Oh, they have adapted. As a matter of fact, we performed for New York Pops Up last February, so we've been in that space for a while now. Mm-hmm. So our dance company members understand the balance that we have to find between safety and the things that they need to do to dance, and they're willing to take those steps.
I'm going to turn to Chris Minnelli at Jiva, who, by the way, reached out to us to tell us about a group of local theaters that Chris is a part of. Jiva, RBTL, JCC, Tykes, Blackfriars, Bristol Valley, that met regularly during the pandemic, comparing notes, talking about strategies, ideas. What did you learn during those meetings?
Well, yeah, and that was actually helmed by my marketing director. She was sort of the representative for us. But, you know, we were talking about how we can coordinate how we all go back into these new spaces, how we go into the space again with audience, and trying to find some common language and some common ways of doing things so people don't have a different set of rules when they're going to one space or the other. You know, as you said, you saw the Broadway theaters came out with sort of a unified plan just this morning. And I think that's valuable so audiences cannot be confused and can know how they're going to enter into spaces.
And so now what's the plan here with Jiva? I know everyone's been sort of itching and it's tough to be off stage, but what's going on now?
Yeah, so, you know, and we did all those things that you sort of mentioned when you're talking about what the public was doing all throughout the year. We did radio plays and we did film versions of shows and streaming. And so our next step that we've been taking is that we're going to have an outdoor production. We're setting up right now for Ring of Fire, which is a show about Johnny Cash and his music. And that's going to be outside, right behind the theater in the parking lot. It's going to be really exciting. If you drive up Clinton right now, you'll see a monstrous stage that's being put up. And we felt that that was a great next step for audience. People, we certainly know that it's safer outside, that, you know, the virus isn't as transmissible outside. And so we thought that was a great step to welcome audiences back to live theater, to be an audience member, not to be doing it on a screen. And then we'll go back into the theater into the fall.
In the fall. Any expectation that, given what we're seeing, that fall schedule could be disrupted?
You know, the thing that the last 16 months has taught us is that anything can be disrupted at any time. Right. I mean, things change, you know, weekly.
Yeah.
They really do. But we've gotten really good at pivoting. So that's what we have plan.
But for now, the plan remains in the fall, on stage, indoors.
It does remain that, yes.
Okay. I'm going to say the word great when I hear that. I am. I'm going to say great because I think the world needs that. And of course you can pivot, but I think that's a wonderful thing. Karen Bauerstock, who is the with Bristol Valley Theater, tell us what's going on there.
Well, we're just about to complete the second of three two-play repertories outdoors. We built an outdoor stage in our parking lot as well. Parking lot theater is the new normal. And it's reduced capacity. It's we are not covered, so it's a constant. Yesterday was a really fun rain prediction day. We spend all of our time looking at weather apps and staring at the sky. But we're about to close the second repertory, and we'll have a third repertory in August of two plays that will alternate performances. Charlene Woodard's Neat will alternate with a new a musical called Swonderful, An Evening with George Gershwin, which is an original that we'll be bringing forward.
Mm. And how are you feeling about, you know, what the schedule looks like compared to what you maybe want it to be?
Well, we will move forward with our fall programming, is the hope, and move back indoors. At the end of the first week of September, this stage is coming down, although that makes me nervous, because what if we need it again? I'm hoping that if I take it down, that we won't need it. But we're going to make some upgrades to our air filtering systems and hopefully feel safe enough to at least bring a partial audience in for fall programming. Our fall programming is rather limited compared to the summer, but we are planning ahead for some weekend events in the fall.
Ralph Maranto at JCC Center Stage. We've talked on this program about some of the creative strings that you have pulled. Tell us what's going on now. Look into the fall and then kind of give me that crystal ball.
Sure.
Of the future,
so we... several months ago, erected our giant tent in the backyard, the Don Lipson Canal Side Stage. And the tent allows for 150 people under the tent and the coverage for the stage and the actors and the musicians. And then there's space for additional seating outside. So once you sell those 150, then other people can sit outside and in the open air. And it's been going great. I mean, we had great full houses for our production of Something Rotten. We also knew that it was expensive to put up this big tent and the infrastructure and everything that was needed to make it happen. So we partnered with other organizations. The RPO has been doing shows there. Blackfriars has been doing shows there. A Magical Journey Through Stages is running their camp, and then they have shows there with their kids. We are going to be a fringe festival venue this year, both with our indoor and our outdoor theater. Blackfriars has Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat on this weekend. Pretty much every weekend there is some sort of event. We had the big wigs there. We've got upcoming jazz nights at the J with some local jazz groups. We've got the Zac Brown Tribute Band coming. So we've got a full, robust schedule, and people are coming. They're having a great time. The bar is open. They're sitting in the open air. Our seats are not 6 feet apart, but the rows are 6 feet apart. So yes, you're sitting near some people who you don't know. But if you choose to request that you can be distanced, then we're putting spaces in between. We're doing everything we can. And because, as Chris said, being outside in the open air, transmission is a lot less. People are comfortable and they're coming back and they're having a great time. What we don't know is how that's going to transition to how comfortable people are going to feel coming inside. People were desperate to experience the arts again. They were desperate to experience theater and music again. And so we've been having a great summer. What will happen when we move into the fall? That's another question.
Are you planning to be indoors in the fall?
We have a full season planned. We haven't announced it yet because we're trying to be careful just to...
Would you like to break a little news?
Well, I would. It's going to be a season of homecomings. We're kicking off with an original show called Searching for Tevye, which will feature Rochester native Bruce Sabbath, who just finished a run on Broadway in The Yiddish Fiddler on the Roof. And he's going to do a cabaret show all about growing up in Rochester, moving to New York, where he worked as an investment banker, and then gave it all up to become a theater person and has been performing on Broadway and off-Broadway. So he's developing a show that we're going to kick off our season with in October. And then in December, we'll have another homecoming. Rochester native Tom Vizzana, who is a creative director for Walt Disney World in Florida, is creating a Disney musical review that we're going to do. And the season will continue from there.
Interestingly, on the outdoor side, Zac Brown Tribute Band, only tribute band more popular than the actual band.
Exactly.
It's really wild.
Absolutely. Yes.
The Canal Side Stage.
Yes.
The Lipson Canal Side Stage. Is that going to stay in the future?
So it's staying through the end of September because of Fringe Festival. And then it comes down. It's a rented tent and all that comes down.
But could
down
it come back,
winter.
I guess, is what I meant.
Yeah, we're looking seriously at bringing it back next summer, possibly even a bigger tent so that more people are able to be under the tent. We'll probably move theater back inside, but we think that there's room for a giant music series out there. And if we can make it all happen now, we can start booking acts, and then we can really have a full summer of music events and other events out there.
To be clear, my understanding, and the reason I asked that question, is not because I want to send the signal pandemic forever. So, next summer,
yeah,
all bets are off. I'm with Chris. You know, who knows where the world goes from here on out? It's everything's up in the air. But my expectation is that we are not going to be in a pandemic forever. It just sounds like that space has really been well received.
Yeah, everybody loves it. It's getting a lot more people using it than when it was a tennis court. You know, and I think that music outside in the summer, it's great. And we can start stepping up the kind of bands that we book because mm-hmm. our theater holds 300, which is a, you know, pretty yeah. big size theater for Rochester. But outside, we can fit up to 999 in that space if we do the structure right. So we're seriously looking at bringing it back next summer if it continues to be as successful as it has been.
Rena Golden at Avenue Black Box Theater. What's going on there?
Hey, well, a lot. A lot. I echo a lot of the things that folks have already talked about, you know, caution, but still moving forward, pressing on the best that we can. And folks being anxious to, you know, have arts back in their lives in multiple ways. So for us currently, our summer teen fellowship is in full swing. That's in person. We are masked indoors, outdoors, and when we're in the community, we're a little bit more relaxed based on the comfort levels of the individuals who would be wearing the masks and their vaccine statuses, et cetera. We actually do not ask vaccine status. I find that to be a little sticky and in some ways, you know, discriminatory. So I don't ask. I just, you know, create something that hopefully provides enough safety and comfort for everyone when we're in the space, especially since we don't know what's going on with the spread. You know, people are vaccinated and some are masked and, you know, we have these guidelines, but, you know, the spread is still happening, you know. So so that's one piece. We're also, since our partnership with the RPO recently in the spring, the RPO Truth is of No Color series that we were a part of, we've actually added film production into the mix of what we are doing with our young people and emerging artists, so that we have a way to actually, I mean, this is actually great for us because it's allowing us to begin to have a body of work that folks can just, you know, go and take a look at, you know, online right now up on our website. Is that 52-minute collaboration with our young people doing spoken word poetry, their reinterpretation of some Langston Hughes poems set in the middle of the composition of Valerie Coleman, a Black woman composer who RPO chose to use this suite of music, Portraits of Langston Hughes, and actually put those on, you know, on RPO musicians, and Herb Smith being a big instrumental part of that as well. And so we've planned another collaboration that that Herb will lead, you know, the musicians part of it. I directed the film vignettes and worked with the youth on it. And this time we're working with their poems that they've written. And so that's a big part of it. And we'll add screenings onto those as our comfort levels, you know, remain, you know, high enough to have audiences in the space. Cause we're a small space. I mean, it feels even smaller when we're obviously, when you're social distancing and that's the norm now, it just doesn't, I have not had the house fully set up since, you know, I would say January of 2020,
yeah.
You know? Yeah, so, but we are developing an outdoor space also in collaboration with the neighborhood, of course, and the city of Rochester in a vacant lot that's adjacent to the Avenue Black Box. Our youth are designing it, working with Sean Dunwoody as the lead artist on that, Luis Burgos as our project manager on that, and they have named it Muse on the Avenue, Mindfulness Unraveling Sacred Expression. So we expect to see, you know, really cool, grounded things happening in that space, you know, including poetry readings, acoustic music, community gatherings, yoga, meditation, dance, you know, drum circles, things like that. And that's exciting because I love the outdoors. And I think someone already mentioned just the idea of, you know, Rochester comes alive in the warm months. And, you know, and it's great to now have that be a natural, you know, just an organic thing to invite audiences to be outside enjoying the outdoors and the beautiful landscape of Rochester, including our urban landscapes, you know. So that's a big part of, you know, looking forward to the future of pandemic or no pandemic, COVID or no COVID. I'm hoping that we keep these outdoor elements just enjoy our community in a different way. For fall, we're planning to have, you know, in-person audiences. I still feel like it's going to be a little bit of a hybrid type of season. It's going to include a reboot of our music program that will feature our Steinway upright piano that came from Alicia Keys' apartment to ours. I think that's also another kind of creative way that we can still have some of bring some of the intimacy back to the creative process without, you know, it being like, you know, huge groups of folks working together. Our Black AF Fridays are also continuing. Our first Friday event will also include a live stream feature for that, for folks who still are not super comfortable being in small spaces with a lot of people. And Blinge, which is our featured support of Black and Latinx shows that may or may not be a part of Fringe Festival. So that's what our fall is looking like so far.
Rena, what did I miss last night?
What did you miss last night?
Let me tell you, Danielle Ponder posted last night, Rena Golden is low-key the dopest poet in the rock. Sheesh. What did I miss?
That was the best post. I woke up to that. It wasn't a live show. I actually, we're working on a project. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say these things. Danielle is so big time now, but we're working on a project together. She asked me to send her some pieces that I... that I just recorded.
See, there you go. We're breaking all the news here.
Talk about this stuff. Like, I don't know. So Danielle, don't kill me.
No. Hey, all right. So we'll put a lid back on that for now. You can come back, talk about that in a different day.
Yeah.
Okay. I just thought that post was so cool. And I thought, well, I mean, it's true. So listeners, if you're just joining us, we're getting a sense of what theater and the arts are doing right now. On the day that Broadway came out, talking about their new rules dealing with the pandemic as they get set in just a matter of days to reopen for the first time in 18 months. Here, theater groups are planning a lot of indoor shows, especially in the fall, and we are seeing a lot of outdoor spaces. They've been creative, and they are hopeful that we are still going to be on the path to being able to see indoor live performances soon, if not now, and some of it's happening already. So let me just read some of what we're seeing in New York City, in Manhattan. So the Broadway rules, which will be in place at least through October and apply to all 41 Broadway theaters, require audience to wear masks except when eating or drinking. Both Broadway and the Met are planning to open at full capacity, no social distancing, and the Met says that masks are going to be optional. Broadway theaters range in size from 600 to 1,900 seats. The Met's 3,800. And the Metropolitan Opera opening in late September, Carnegie Hall opening in October, are not only planning to require proof of vaccination, but no kids under 12 who are not yet eligible to be vaccinated will be able to go to their shows. There are some theaters that are saying, kids under 12, if you got us a proof of a negative COVID test recently. But that's generally not happening there. They're saying under 12, we can't do that in some of the theaters there. So that's a look at what's happening down in Manhattan. And so now let me turn to our guests and just ask about what kind of adaptations we can sort of keep stomaching, and what kind is the adaptation that you would say, ooh, that's going to be tough. Because I know, as Chris Minnelli said, you're going to pivot. You keep adapting, and it's remarkable. But it's tough to do some of these things again. John Parkhurst from the Rochester Broadway Theater League told us earlier this week that they can mask, they can cut down concession sales, but if there's another call for distancing and you go from a 2,400-seat theater to 400 capacity, they're in real trouble, probably can't do it. And so for him, that's kind of, he called that the death blow. And those are his words. I'm curious to know, Bill Ferguson, what can you handle in terms of adaptation, and what would be really, really tough to do or do again?
Well, one of the things that we have, that Garfig and Dance has to deal with is, you know, we perform in other people's theaters, so we sort of have to go with the restrictions that other theaters are working under. So, you know, we have to be pretty versatile and be able to pivot quickly, as Chris said. The toughest part for me is the kids under 12 not being able to come see live theater. You know,
what are you doing with that?
We're still in the middle of trying to figure out how we're going to deal with it. Part of me wants to say, you know, if the child is masked and they have a negative test, they can come in to see the theater, because that's where you learn to love theater. That's where you learn to love dance. That's where you learn to love most things in your life, is when you're young and you get a taste of it, you know. So that's a question that we're going to continue to ask. And, you know, our restrictions will probably be announced just as we're getting ready to open. It's a tough situation. We're going to be performing with the Eastman Percussion Ensemble and the Eastman Saxophone Project at the Eastman School of Music in October, and we're really excited to be in the theater. You know, I mean, everybody's plans are looking forward to being in the theater, and I can't imagine it without kids under 12 there. You know, it just seems like it's a natural thing.
That's such a hard part of this pandemic, isn't it, right now, with not everyone being able to get vaccinated, and we don't know when the next green light comes. We don't know if it's 8 and up. We don't know if it's 5 and up. It's hard to plan for that as a parent. It's hard to plan for that, I'm sure, in the arts community, whereas you say you not only want kids to be there, but you need kids to be there to keep growing it and to build that habit. Yeah, it's tough.
We have our school. Our school is one of our revenue makers, and you know, we have classes for kids from 3 to 12 years old. You know, on that's where we get our kids. And so now how do we deal with that? Where's the question there? I know we're not talking about that now, but those are the kind of questions that we all have to deal with. As the company goes, we're gonna be performing. If we can be in a theater, if there's 400 people there, we're gonna be there performing. If there can be a full theater, we're going to be there performing. So it's just a matter of what the theaters can handle.
Mm-hmm. But come hell or high water, you're performing. Yeah,
we're going to be out there. We had a whole year of not doing anything, you know, of not being able to perform. Virtual dance online is a great is an alternative. One of the wonderful things about dance online is we found a new way to invigorate the dance as a medium, you know, so it's going to be special to see what happens out of that. But that's going to be a very small percentage of how dance is presented. And all the dancers out there that have been waiting for theaters to open, all the Broadway dancers out there, all the actors, all those people that have been waiting for theaters to open now, and we're just getting ready to open, and things are tightening up again. Like Chris says, we got to be ready to pivot. But I think all the artists are going to be ready for whatever happens.
Okay. Chris, what do you make of John Parker's comments about social distancing being the hardest part?
Yeah, I mean, I think capacity is the biggest challenge there. I mean, you know, for us, our guiding force through all of this is always how can we be as safe as possible with folks, for the audiences, for our artists, for our staff, all of that. That's the main thing. And so, you know, that social distancing piece, as we're learning more too, that's really important. As this has progressed, we've learned a lot more about this virus and what it does and how we can take steps to keep ourselves as safe as possible. And the capacity thing is really tricky for theaters, because that's what we do. Is our goal is to fill that place up, right? Mm-hmm. Is to fill it up every mm-hmm. night. And so when you start getting down to just, you know, 20% of your people, you know, the economics don't work well in the best of times. And so when you get to that, it's really, it makes it hard to go forward. But, you know, I'm hopeful that that piece is not going to come back as a constraint. I do think those other things you mentioned about people having proof of vaccination, maybe masking indoors still, I think all of those things are things we're going to have to consider as we get into the fall, depending on what the conditions are. And every place in the United States is different now too, right? And people getting vaccinated. You know, the thing that gets us back to theater as quick as possible is as many people getting vaccinated as possible, right? That's really key. So I hope people still continue to do that. I hope we can gather in ways where we're not masked and we don't have to check vaccines, right? But that might be a thing that we have to do so we can be as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done other things, like we've upgraded our HVAC system to have, you know, better filtration and all of those things. So we're making every effort we can. But the capacity piece is the trickiest one.
That would be the hardest one. Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
And apart from the economics, what's the difference in the energy inside a building when you're at 20% versus 80 to 100?
Sure. I mean, if anyone's ever gone to a show and you've gone to a show where, like, hardly anyone's there, right? Like, you feel like you're sitting in the audience just, like, trying to get some energy, because the actors, the performers, they're feeding off that energy too, right? So when you've got a full house, it's electric, right? And that's the experience too. The experience is coming together with a group of people you don't know and doing this thing together, and it's magic, right? It's not quite the same magic when only 20% of the house is filled, right? So we want to bring people together. That's how we create the community.
Well, let's turn to Karen Bauerstock and talk about what you could sort of withstand and what you can't.
Well, I think if I was having a conversation with colleagues the other day, and what someone said to me, which keeps echoing in my head, is we pivoted to get here. This taught us that we can reimagine everything. So I think looking forward, yeah, we might have to reimagine again, but I think we can feel good about the fact that we created a whole new model, an outdoor model, a smaller model, a reduced capacity model. Everything was different this year. So I think that whatever this is, and my season was 2 weeks in, and masks came off. So that changed all, I had all my COVID protocols in place, and then they were able to loosen a little bit. And so we continue to be able to roll with the punches. And I think that's the resilience of art. And I think that's the resilience of our performers and our staff. And I think that that's what we will stick with going forward. It's going to change. Weekly, maybe, I think that this thing coming down from the Broadway theaters will help reinforce anything that we choose to do. I'm very happy to hear that there's a plan. And I think that the group of us that have been meeting to come up with a unified plan will also strengthen each other in facing whatever comes down the pike.
So you think the Broadway news today will have ripples beyond Broadway?
I hope so. I hope we can manifest that. It's easy to, because we've all heard Bill Bauer, I'm not gonna from our irate patrons. Some are wonderful about it, but about making accommodations. But having that example will make it easier for us to consider the same things.
I've still literally never heard one child say, "I won't wear a mask." I've only heard adults say it.
Kids are so much better about wearing masks.
Well, that's been such a theme lately. It's true, though.
It's really
amazing.
Yeah.
Kids adapt so well. And I'm not saying we should ask them to do it forever, but...
We've seen that happen at the JCC. We have the Wolk Children's Center there. Kids there, 3 and up, are wearing masks every single day, and it is not a problem. And the JCC is home to Tykes Children's Theater, and Tykes stands for Theater Young Kids Enjoy. So... none of those audience members, except their parents, are over 12. And as a result, we had to take the entire year off from Tykes, and we want to get back to it. We have great shows lined up for the fall. But we assume that everyone's going to have to wear a mask because we know we can't be asking for vaccinations from 6-year-olds.
Let me just ask Rena briefly, and then we'll ask Ralph and Rena about sort of their perspective on adaptation. But I think I heard you jumping in, Rena, to say that.
Yeah.
And we talk about kids and masking. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I always knew that was going to be the case, that the kids were going to adapt. They were going to do what they needed to do. It wasn't going to turn into a hostile situation when you have to remind them, to put their mask up over their nose and things like that. And we're still seeing that, and that's promising. Obviously they touch everything, and they, the social distancing is really hard for them, So it's not a perfect plan, mm-hmm. but I do find that that helps me stay focused, knowing that I'm actually trying to keep kids safe. It's not as simple as like personal preference and who doesn't feel like wearing a mask today, or who believes that they are they have super immunity, because they've been vaccinated or because they've never got COVID or whatever their reasons are. So I think it makes it easier for me to sort of play to the most vulnerable in our scenario, which it's the younger kids who are not vaccinated and they don't have that, at least that level of protection. But with audiences, that's programming, that's a little bit more controllable because you're building a relationship with them. Audiences, for us, free and open to the public for our shows for small children, that does get a little scary. And I think one of the things that we're often talking about when we are looking at what the rules are, what the guidelines are, what the state's saying, whoever's saying, is that I think we're talking about minimizing liability versus increasing safety. And I have to really remember that I'm focusing first and foremost on safety, right? Preventing death, on preventing folks having to go through, the stories that we've heard of people being hospitalized, et cetera. And yes, the vaccine may be a great way to do that, until it's not. And we find out that, mm-hmm. that we're back in another situation because of a variant or because of, you know, of, you know, the it only lasts for, you know, for a year, and there needs to be a booster, and how do we get everybody in for the boosters and things like that. So erring on the side of that safety, I mean, we can't survive off ticket sales in a small house like ours anyway. So this innovation with safety first, and you know, that's critical, and it's also a huge opportunity for us to continue to be creative. I agree with Bill. It's our nature to stay ready, you know, so we never have to get ready, right? So we have that going for us as artists, you know, as you know, as creators. But, you know, we have to shift and get creative. And like Karen said, reimagine, you know, what you keep reimagining. Don't get stuck and say, OK, this is what it's supposed to be. You know, we all want that. You know, we want that magic to come back of these electric houses and packed houses and full things. But, you know, just shifting and thinking, OK, what does that look like now? What does a successful, you know, show or program look like now, and building off of that with, you know, with everyone's safety in mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about you, Ralph Maranto, when it comes to the question of what you can sort of withstand? You know, Rena's talking about everybody wants the packed house, everybody wants right. it filled, but, you know, you may have to continue it a certain way. Whereas on Broadway, they're talking about full houses again. What do you envision for the fall, and what would be the hardest to withstand if you had to sort of readapt?
Well, one thing I'll say for sure is I don't think most audiences want to go back online. We got through it for a little while. People were coming out and checking out the shows online, but it does not have the feeling of coming to a live performance. And I think audiences are pretty much done with online for most of the situations. So they want to be back in the space. We want them back in the space. I'm trying to picture, you know, a comedy where there's a room full of people and they're all wearing masks and you can't see them smiling and you can't get the sound of their laughter muffled through their masks that's helping spread the energy. And I think that's going to be a bit of a challenge. But I also think that it's really impossible for us to survive financially if we're going to continue to have to distance. I mean, I have a little more flexibility than a Jiva or a Broadway Theater League. I can program some smaller shows. I can program some extra performances to try to spread out the audience a little bit more. But in the end, we can't pay our bills at, you know, 33 or 25% capacity. It's just impossible.
What did it mean to you then to see the Broadway news today?
I was glad to see leadership. Yeah, I mean, we were talking about, like, well, you know, if the variants continue the way they're going, if the numbers continue the way they were going, we're probably going to have to ask people to wear masks, and they're not going to be happy about that. But when Broadway and the national tours and the leaders coming out of New York are saying that that's what it's going to be, it's much easier for us to all say, great, then we can all be unified in that.
Yeah, and you have to remember, it wasn't until maybe March. It was a year before we got any kind of guidance on how we could open our spaces at all, right? Mm-hmm. So we spent a year just making plans and hoping something would come down. So, yeah, so that leadership is really critical.
We were the first shut down and the last to reopen.
Yeah,
I mean, the arts were the first thing to go away, large gatherings, and the last thing to start up again.
I can't believe it's 12:44. That just means I kind of thought it was like 12:30. We are flying through this hour as we talk arts. It has been a long 18 months. It's a fast hour as we talk about what they are working on to not only bring audiences back, but to potentially bring audiences back indoors, maybe even fully, full capacity indoors. I mean, there's a lot that's happening on the day that Broadway announced its own plans for reopening as it gets ready for the first reopening in 18 months. So let's take our only break of the hour and we'll come right back. And I will ask all of our guests to maybe pick one or two things. And they've been talking about this, but if there's one or two things that really stand out to them that they cannot wait to see you indoors or wherever again soon, it's wonderful to have the arts back. Bill Ferguson is here from Garth Fagan. Chris Minnelli is here from Jiva. Ralph Maranto from JCC. Rena Golden from the Avenue Black Box Theater. Karen Bowersock from Bristol Valley Theater. We're right back with them next. Coming up in our second hour, Governor Andrew Cuomo says remote work doesn't work. And he says private employers need to call their employees back to the office by Labor Day. He says remote workers aren't as creative, they're not as productive, and overall it's just bad for business. What do remote workers think about that? You're going to hear from them next hour.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bill Ferguson, what's one or two things that you just can't wait to see people back for?
I just can't wait to see people back at full theater and feel that energy of people in the full theater. That excitement of being an audience member and you're going to see something you've seen before and you can't wait to see again. You're going to see something that's brand spanking new and you have no idea and you're excited about seeing it. You have a new friend that you brought to the theater and you want to introduce them to Garfagan Dance for the first time. You know, that kind of excitement, the excitement of being on the stage, being behind the curtain and hearing the rustle of the audience, you know, it just gets your adrenaline flowing and you go through your pre-show, you know, your pre-show regimen so that you're ready. You know, I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I got to tell
you
a little story.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I recall a time we were touring Griot, New York in the Midwest. It was late fall, early winter, and one of the theaters we were going to perform in, something happened where electricity went off. The only space that was available to us was a space that had no heat for 3 or 4 weeks. It was like 32 degrees outside. Everybody who was going to the theater to see Garfinger Dance kept their coats on, sat in a room that was about 32 degrees. Garfinger Dance performed in that room. We did Prelude, the men are topless. I do a roll on the floor. That was the cold. I can still remember hitting the floor. But the excitement and the joy and the fact that we were willing to do what it took to perform. You know, and I think that's one of the most exciting things that I'm looking forward to for our new group of dancers at Garfinger Dance, for all the actors and performers that have an opportunity to perform who live by performing.
Did the audience know what you were feeling when you hit the floor?
I'm a
You held it together.
Fagan dancers, nobody knows. Nobody knows.
I knew you held it together. You know, Bill, there are people who love dance. And there are people, as you said, who will bring a friend. And I am sure people come up to you and say, I did not know I would love dance.
Oh, often.
You're looking forward to that too?
I'm so looking forward to that. Because the thing that's special about Garfinger Dance is those people, there are a lot of people who say they don't like dance, they don't want to see dance. But when they see us, they see dance in a way that they had never imagined it before. And so when they come and see dance in a way that they have never imagined it before, and then they say, maybe I'll head out to the JCC and see what's going on out there. Or I'll go over to Jiva and check out what they're doing outside or what they're doing inside. Or I'll head down to Naples, have a little bit of wine and have a good time, you know. And so, you know, each one of us feed the other one, mm-hmm. you know. So it would be a shame if we had to close down again. It would be a big fight. I hope that if it comes to masking and vaccines, that enough people are willing to be masked and enough people are willing to take the vaccine so that artists can perform and do what they do again.
Rena Golden, what's something that stands out to you that you're really looking forward to having people back for?
I think just what that made me think of, Bill, is I miss the intimacy, you know, of creating together and you know, working through that process and the rehearsals and all of the, you know, just the emotional component that often is physical. So sharing that magic and, you know, sharing that magic with your, you know, with your creative colleagues. And sometimes, you know, that, you know, just being, I don't know, there's nothing like that bond of creating together and in person, right? And, you know, sharing that magic with others, the post-show hugs and tears and laughter and, you know, folks hanging back so they can, you know, they can share what it meant to them, you know, with the, those who they just saw on stage. And that's something at the Avenue that, you know, that I definitely miss. I miss that, you know, that those moments, you know, after or during the process, because we're just together less. Now, you know, it's we may get the thing together and then, you know, show up and do the thing, you know, especially when you're talking about live streaming and things like that. But I do miss that, the intimacy, you know, of it all. So I do look forward to that, a time when we are, you know, I'm not going to say I'm hoping we go back to normal, because we know that there's a lot of problems with normal, you know, and what, you know, what has existed, you know, in the arts ecosystem and, you know, and in the world. But I am very much looking forward to some of those norms and the familiarity that, you know, that comes from being able to be, you know, intimate and close with others and less guarded with others.
Yep. Karen Bauerstock, Bristol Valley Theater. What's one or two things you're really looking forward to?
I am looking forward to not having to check the weather report
for art
several times a day and do updates on our Facebook page about whether or not we're going forward.
And it's been really hard this month, isn't it?
Oh.
I'm a Little League baseball coach. I feel like it's been ridiculous.
Very wet, very hot.
Yes.
Very, you know, we're selling
Soupy.
Sunscreen, we're selling bug spray, we're selling visors, we're selling two different kinds of fans. I'm looking forward to not having to be weather dependent. And that's, but I think that everybody's put it very well, that we are a family, both within the Naples community, within the arts community as a whole, but our BVT family is a family. And the family, we've had to reduce the number of positions that we had. We have much more intimate productions. We've cut staff for our summer season. And I'm looking forward to having the family back.
What is the hardest weather to plan for when you have to do this outside? Is it the 50% sort of rain, or, you know, the 'cause a wall of rain, you know what's coming.
Yes,
the
well, we have
the pop-up stuff. I really have no. I would like a word with the pop-up stuff.
Yes.
That's just not going to work anymore.
It's well. That's what yesterday was about. For we had two show day yesterday, and at hour, which is when we make the call, is an hour till showtime. At an hour till showtime, it had stopped, but the radar was saying it was coming back.
Yeah.
Did we cancel?
Yeah.
We had a full house.
It's the worst.
You know, did we cancel or did we? So we went ahead, and same thing happened in the evening performance. It actually started to rain as soon as we got the set up. We had to cover everything with tarps, bag all the lights. Then we had to come back, and 15 minutes later, it was over. Was it coming back? Should we cancel? I mean, that was the challenge.
We can't live like this, Karen.
No, we can't.
We're done with this.
The suspense is killing me.
I'm with you there. Chris Minnelli at Jiva Theater Center, what are one or two things you're really looking forward to?
So one thing that I've been really looking forward to has been happening now, and it's been getting our staff and our artists back to work. It was such a long time that those folks... that we couldn't bring them back. And so I'm even getting emotional about it right now just because it was really hard. We had folks that were furloughed for over a year, and we had artists all over the place that we wanted to work with and we couldn't, right? So to start bringing those folks back together again and getting together and starting to create art again, that's been incredible. And then I can't wait to share that with our audiences and get in community with our audiences again and start and bringing theater to life on a stage.
People want to work, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Amen. Yeah. Everybody does. Everybody wants to create. Everybody I know wants to get back and wants to create and wants to do it together. And so I'm really thankful that we're doing that right now. And that's why we can't shut down again. We can't. We got to keep going.
Ralph Maranto, what's one or two things that stand out to you?
Well, I think everybody said it best, just getting everybody back together again. I'm very much looking forward to our first indoor show, which is coming at the end of this month, actually, August 28th and 29th.
That's next month still.
It's close. But yeah,
day,
August 28th and 29th, Daniel Emmett, Rochester native, who was a finalist in America's Got Talent, two shows, the 28th and 29th. And, you know, we're planning vaccine and negative testing. We are at this point assuming we're going to be asking people to wear masks. So we kept that vague when we first put the tickets on sale because we didn't know what was going on. And I would love to see that the audiences are ready to come back and enjoy live music again and have two packed houses.
Are you nervous for the first indoor show?
No, not at all.
Let me redirect the question then. What are you most nervous about, given all of the weird sort of circumstances?
I'm most nervous that with all the efforts we're taking with vaccines, with screening, with masking, with filtration systems, and education, that people are still going to be nervous about coming back in. I mean, we've been operating the fitness center at the JCC for many, many months with no concerns. Our children's center has been operating. Yeah. We have the filtration. Yeah. We have the policies. We are cleaning. We are doing everything we can to keep people safe. But there's a little bit of post-traumatic stress from people, we need to get them over
you.
That.
Mm-hmm. We'll be there, though. I'm with you.
Excellent.
Okay, so in our last minute, real quick, everybody just tell people where you can find out information about shows, upcoming events, performances, etc. JCC is where?
JCCRochester.org.
JCCRochester.org. Green and Golden Avenue Black Box Theater online where?
AvenueTheater.org, and please follow on all social media at Avenue Black Box.
All right, Karen Bowerstock, Bristol Valley Theater.
BVTNaples.org.
BVTNaples.org. Chris Minnelli, Jiva Theater Center.
JivaTheater.org.
JivaTheater.org. And it's theatre.
It is R-E, not E-R.
We're E-R.
We're R-E.
Are you guys saying you're better than Karen? Is that what I just heard? I think you are. Karen, you don't have to take that. Bill Ferguson, Garth Fagan Dance.
GarthFaganDance.org.
with the best voice in radio right there.
There you go.
Yes.
Check us out on our social media too.
Good luck to all of you and your colleagues who couldn't be on this program today, because there are so many more.
Yeah.
You mentioned Blackfriars. There's so many great people in this town creating art, and they have waited, as Chris Minnelli said, they have been waiting to work and perform. Good luck to you. We will be there. Thanks everybody. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We got more connections coming up.